free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own my special interest groups that fund their campaign. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today's program, we spend the hour looking at issues surrounding the election integrity movement and election fraud in the United States. We're joined by members of the Voting Rights Task Force, as well as author Jonathan Simon, the Executive Director of Election Defense Alliance, and media analyst and author Professor Mark Crispin Miller of New York University. Please stay with us.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, skies, another guise of democracy, politics, of the apocalypse, got the skies like an ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I am Mickey Huff, your host for the hour. On today's program, we're looking at national election integrity. This is, of course, an ongoing issue. You've heard about problems with our elections, rumors of Russian hacking, voter fraud, unexpected election results, obstructed recounts, hacked voter registration databases, unverifiable voting machine totals. The list goes on and on. Are we worried about our elections? You bet we are. And there's actually a conference surrounding this issue, a very important one. We're going to talk about that, National Election Integrity Conference. And we're going to be talking with some folks that are co-chairs of the Voting Rights Task Force. In fact, our first two guests, Richard Tam and Jim Soper, have about 30 years of experience of programming between them. We'll also soon be joined by the Executive Director of Election Defense Alliance, Jonathan Simon. Later in the program, Mark Crispin Miller will join the program. But first, let's begin our conversation with Richard Tam and Jim Soper in studio. Richard and Jim, thanks for joining the Project Censored Show.
Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it. This is Richard Tam. Mm-hmm.
And this is Jim Soper. Thank you for having us here.
It's my pleasure to have you. Project Censored is no stranger to election integrity issues. We've long talked about the problems with our elections and the failure of corporate media to accurately call them out or stick on these issues. And let's start with you, Richard. I was reading from the introduction there some of your words about the problems surrounding our elections. Talk to us a little bit about the Voting Rights Task Force and what you and Jim are up to.
Well, the Voting Rights Task Force has been around since the 2004 election debacle, and we've been focusing mainly local and state, and we've done a little bit federal as far as that could be effective. The last few years, we've successfully killed at least four, possibly more attempts to introduce internet voting into the state because internet voting is so unauditable and so insecure. And by the way, I think it's more like 30 years experience each in programming. I've been more of a mainframe programmer, and Jim has been more on the apps and micros. And we successfully got Alameda County to not renew its contract with Diebold. And thanks to our work and to some surprise help from a Republican on the Alameda County Board, they instituted something to insist that every single vote on a touchscreen voting machine, that the ballot, the paper copy ballot, be counted for every single vote. So in Alameda County, we pushed the touchscreen voting machines into the corner, and Deborah Bowen followed that example and made that a statewide regulation. So we've been very effective with a number of things and are currently fighting a new bill, AB 840, and I'll let Jim pick it up from here.
Mm-hmm. Jim Soper?
AB 840 is a bill that was snuck in on August 24th as an amendment to a relatively innocuous bill about what do you do when the vote-by-mail envelopes don't have a proper signature. And it was the procedure. That's what the bill was originally about. And then they came along. This is written by Assemblymember Quirk, who's down in Hayward. And
Hayward, California.
Hayward, California, yes. What he did is there's a section of the elections code that says that California, the elections officials shall conduct a random tally of 1% of the precincts in their county, and including vote-by-mail ballots. The law explicitly says that. And the bill says only those ballots that have been counted on election night. All the other ballots that are coming in on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all the provisional ballots, we're not going to check. There's not going to be an audit of them. And this is not trivial. We're talking 4 million ballots that will not be audited. And we looked at this and said, no, wait a minute. This isn't right. This isn't transparency. The public doesn't know if the results are correct. And they slipped this bill in on August 24th, which is very late in the process. It has already gone through the Assembly Elections Committee, the full Assembly floor, the Senate Elections Committee. The two Elections Committee have the people that should be carefully considering this, and they skipped it. And I just went to the Senate floor, passed the Senate floor, and we launched a major campaign just to get it back into the Assembly Elections Committee. And we succeeded in doing that. That took a lot of work and maneuvering. And then they passed it in the Elections Committee, and it's now sitting on the governor's desk. He has not acted on it. He has until October 15th to act on that. We have to convince him to veto it. There's people talking to him. The Sacramento Bee has endorsed our position, opposed to this law, and has urged the governor to veto this. We're going to urge all you listeners out there to call the governor's office at 916-445-2841.
And this is Governor Jerry Brown.
Governor Jerry Brown,
right?
In California, call up and say, veto AB 840. We want all the ballots checked.
And okay, that's the position then of your organization, right?
Yeah.
And
right.
So this is something that you are asking people to do on the basis, course, of trying to achieve election integrity. Richard Tam, Jim Soper, either of you, what is your take at this point in terms of what does it appear that Governor Brown may do?
Well, he's delayed signing it, and we're encouraged because the longer that he delays, the stronger there's a possibility that he may veto it. But there's the problem with the California regulations in that if he does not veto it, it still becomes law.
Yeah, that's the peculiar element that some people in the public certainly might not follow or might not understand how some of these things actually happen. And then they happen in hindsight and they go back and say, well, how did that happen? Well, one of the issues is, well, they might not understand that.
Right.
But the other is, even if there's a tension about election integrity issues, as we said from the outset, Richard Tam, it seems like people seem to be interested in maybe some of the wrong problems, right? Like Russian hacking that we don't have evidence.
Right.
So that's a key problem. And I know that there is this National Integrity Conference happening, and it's October 7 and 8 in Berkeley, California. Some of the listeners around the country, of course, will hear this after the conference, so they can go and check out your website, which is nvrtf.org, NVRTF.
And that stands for National Voting Rights Task Force.
That's NVRTF.org. And is it possible for our listeners to A, view it streaming live, and B, after the fact, archive or watch that? Jim Soper?
It will be streamed live on Facebook. You'll have to search for Voting Rights Task Force, the page, not the group. There's actually two groups. There's the Voting Rights Task Force California and a Voting Rights Task Force U.S., where we have information about legislation going in California at the federal level. Those are the groups. Then there's a page simply called Voting Rights Task Force, and that's where it will be live streamed.
And I will be uploading them all within the week up to YouTube. And it would be on a YouTube channel. If you go to YouTube and put in the search line for YouTube, California Election Integrity Coalition. If you type that, all four words in, California Election Integrity Coalition, you will get all the videos from this conference plus last year's conference plus other interviews we've done with other people during the year. They will all be uploaded there.
So Richard Tam and Jim Soper, also Project Censored, will link those to our page and our social media sites. So we will definitely make sure that we get the word out about this, where people can find and access this very important information. And, you know, very briefly, Richard and Jim, could you tell us some of the people that are participating here and what some of the key issues are other than the bill that you just discussed?
Last May, we started drawing up a list of who we want. And there are election conferences scattered here and there throughout the year. They're mostly for academics, and they present papers and so on. And Jill Stein took some of the money that she got from the recount and held state-level conferences in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. But those were at state level. And we said, we're going to do national. And we contacted just about every nationally recognized leader in the country, and most of them are coming. John Brakey, Virginia Martin, Jan Bendor of Michigan, Virginia Martin's from New York, Brakey's from Arizona, Karen McKim is from Wisconsin.
Bob Fitrakis from Ohio.
Bob Fitrakis from Ohio.
Paul Thomas from Massachusetts.
There's going to be a whole bunch of people coming, and they're really excited that they're all going to be in the same place.
And this is an all-star lineup. I mean, anybody that's been following election integrity issues, this is
an all-star lineup.
I don't like sports analogies, but it's kind of a Super Bowl election integrity, right? If only as many people cared about election integrity as care about the Super Bowl.
Right.
Perhaps we'd be in a different situation.
Perhaps.
With our fledgling democracy.
Yeah. So if you're not local and you can't free up the time for being there, you have a great opportunity to see it online on Facebook or on YouTube.
We are speaking with Richard Tam and Jim Soper, co-chairs of the Voting Rights Task Force. The event is a national election integrity conference that can be attended live in Berkeley, California, October 7 and 8, or viewed thereafter online and archived. And please pay attention to the Project Censored page and social media pages for that information. You can get more information about the event and about this key issue about national election integrity from nvrtf.org. This is Mickey Huff. You're listening to the Project Censored Show. Today's show, we're looking into election integrity issues. And after the brief musical break, we will be joined by Jonathan Simon, the executive director from Election Defense Alliance. And a little bit later in the program, we'll be joined by NYU professor and media scholar who has a lot of experience with election integrity issues, Mark Crispin Miller. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I am Mickey Huff. Today's program, we're looking at national election integrity issues. And right now, we are joined by the executive director of Election Defense Alliance, Jonathan Simon. He is the author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft and the New American Century. Jonathan Simon, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks for the invite.
It's great to have you here. As I mentioned earlier in the program, Project Censored is no stranger to election fraud issues, voter suppression issues. We've long covered the failure of the corporate press to adequately address these concerns. And they're, in fact, growing concerns. And it's not just the notion that people should be worried about the alleged Russian hacking that there's no proof for. But we also saw last year the CIA came out and said, oh, well, this is suddenly a possibility, as if it wasn't a possibility last decade or if it wasn't a possibility in previous elections. But of course, only Russia can do it. So we don't need to worry about that. That's sarcasm. The real issue here is that these problems are ongoing and growing. And Jonathan Simon, tell us about this really important issue that threatens our democratic republic and the integrity of it.
Well, you know, the Project Censored part is really where it starts, because the biggest problem with this issue has been just how rigorously it has been ignored by the press, by the actors on the political stage. This has been kicking around probably for decades. I mean, computers have been involved in the counting of votes in one way or another since probably the mid-20th century, but they really kicked in a big way, such that virtually all votes are counted in the pitch dark of cyberspace, as we like to put it, in about 2002 with the passage of the Help America Vote Act. And that's a long way back in the rearview mirror. This is 15 years that people like Jim and Richard and Mark Crispin Miller and myself and quite a few others who are concerned about electoral integrity and electoral security have been making as much noise as we possibly can. And, you know, part of that noise has been to point out the vulnerabilities of the vote counting process to manipulation and fraud. And that has been echoed to some extent by some of the heavy hitters like the Brennan Center and Princeton, Johns Hopkins, Caltech, et cetera, et cetera. There's almost, I'd say, unanimity among the experts that the system is extremely vulnerable, that indeed, as has been concluded in many of these reports, that a single person acting from the inside or hacking into the system could change the results of literally hundreds of electoral contests. So that vulnerability has been sort of in the air. What has been squelched completely has been the evidence that the fraud is not just hypothetical or theoretical, but has actually been occurring. And that's where election forensics comes in. That's where people like myself, you know, go and we gather data and we analyze the data and we do pattern analysis on the data. And we have to work basically with the data, the vote counts, the exit polls, comparisons between different types of vote counts, different types of machines, one election to another, competitive elections versus non-competitive elections. We have to work in that realm of statistics, because this is a system that has been designed to be concealed from the public, from investigation, from analysts. And by that I mean that the hard evidence, which you call hard evidence, voter marked paper ballots, memory cards, the code on those cards, has completely been withheld from public inspection, even from the inspection of election administrators. This is all corporate property. It's been deemed proprietary. So it's all completely secret. So in the absence of hard evidence, you start looking for statistical patterns, which are used routinely in astronomy, agronomy, epidemiology, all sorts of different studies to try to get a grip on what's going on in the world. But when it comes to election forensics, our analysis of the data, which has quite often been damning, which is to say, we say, look, there's pretty good evidence here, many red flags, and good evidence that votes have been miscounted and almost certainly deliberately miscounted. That presentation of evidence and those conclusions are dismissed routinely as conspiracy theory. They're met either with a shrug of the shoulders, journalistic shrug of the shoulders, or with outright mockery.
Indeed. Jonathan Simon and Mark Crispin Miller will be joining us in a little while, and he has also long been on this. I'm glad you brought up the moniker of conspiracy theory or theorist and the great specter and negativity that goes with that, that really dismisses outright all of this evidence that you and others have marshaled over the years. And once again, you mentioned that, you know, this methodology is used in epidemiology and astronomy, just not democracy.
Yeah, and, you know, again, there are conspiracy theorists, and there are conspiracy theories. I mean, especially today in the age of fake news, you can make up pretty much anything. What separates the wheat from the chaff is numbers, actual facts that cannot be disputed, that can be traced back to state electoral websites, you know, Secretary of State's vote count reporting, published exit poll findings, et cetera, et cetera. Stuff that, especially when you look at the exit polls, I mean, has been used routinely, usually with the endorsement and the urging of the U.S. government to overturn elections in other places, you know, places like the Ukraine or Kenya. Incidentally, Kenya, just the Supreme Court there voted a redo of their election based on far less persuasive evidence than some of what we have presented over the years for our elections. So the standard here is basically it could never happen here. This is the beacon of democracy, and the one thing that Americans can still take pride in, having fallen far from our post-World War II perch, is that we are the first and we are the best democracy, and don't you dare impugn that. And so there is a psychology behind that that is very strong, that sort of sets up a high wall of denial. And then beyond that, we're not sure. We're not sure what some of the motives are for really steadfast refusal to look under the hood. One of the most eye-glazing things I could do at this point is present some of this data, so I'll spare all our listeners the gory details, but I will say that election after election has generated red flags, that it's almost always in the same direction, and that information is in my book, it's in Code Red, and it's in a lot of articles. You know, this stuff is not hard to find, and I will say that a tremendous amount of careful, and for the most part, I mean, there are some analysts who I think succumb a little bit to, you know, the frustration and the biases that come out of that frustration. But most of us, and I will say for myself, strive very, very hard to look at this through a neutral lens and a nonpartisan lens. What comes through that lens, we can't help it if it has a partisan slant to it. That's the reality. But we're not going at this with an axe to grind. We're going at this, or if we do have an axe, it's just to say, look, vote counting needs to be observable. It needs to be public in order for it to be trusted. You can go everywhere from elections in 2002, when they pulled the exit polls, so there were no baselines for comparison, all the way up through the Ossoff handle election in Georgia's 6th congressional district, a very high-profile election earlier this year in June, and we find powerful forensic evidence that there is manipulation of vote counts going on, and at the very, very minimum, that the system, you know, however you might regard the odds based on that evidence, and of course when it piles up year after year after year after year, it becomes harder to explain away by individual benign explanations. But whatever you think of the evidence, the certainty is that the system cannot prove its own validity. I mean, take an election like Georgia 6th, about 90% of those votes were counted on paperless DREs, touchscreen computers, that have no paper trail, no evidence of the vote whatsoever. The only thing you can do by way of a recount is push the button and have the machine run its exact same program again. So that election cannot demonstrate that it was in any way legitimate.
And also, we learned from Vault 7 WikiLeaks, the CIA can actually make it appear that other countries are hacking into our systems. This is fascinating in many ways, because you go back to 2004 election and Steve Freeman was writing about, was the election stolen, right? It was a question mark, obviously rhetorical, given Steve Freeman's research, also a book published by Seven Stories Press. And you alluded to this earlier. This is an ongoing thing, and it seems to be getting worse, or it's at least ongoing, right, and getting perhaps more sleuth, more stealth, more under the radar, so to speak, because of so-called proprietary rights and all the other things you said. But it's also the collusion of the corporate news media and the political class that does not want to call attention to this and derides anybody that wants to call attention to that issue. Jonathan Simon.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of interesting things sort of converging now, trends. And one of them is that, you know, if you rig enough successfully, and again, you know, the media focus, the public focus on presidential elections, but the real vulnerability here is the infrastructure of American politics, state legislatures, the U.S. House. If you're successful enough at getting your boys in there and girls, you can then start rewriting the rules for the conduct of elections, i.e. voter suppression. You can gerrymander very, very ruthlessly these days.
All of which has been going on.
And so then it becomes sort of self-sustaining. You run into this catch-22 when, in a certain sense, you get to a point where you might not even have to rig anymore. The other piece of that puzzle, though, is that if you're governing so abysmally that your approval rating drops down to, let's say, 8%, which is what the GOP majority in Congress had going into the 2014 election, where incidentally they returned 99% of their House incumbents and actually gained 13 seats. If you govern that abysmally, then you have to start pulling out all the stops again. And that's what we're seeing with the Kobach Commission, the Kobach-Pence Commission, where they're trying to really, really get a handle and, you know, get as much voter suppression going as they possibly can. And also, then you have to do the covert work of actually manipulating vote counts. Because all the efforts that you're making and all the gerrymandering and all the big money and all the voter suppression turn out not to be enough when your minority is shrinking as a result of the fact that you're governing the way, for instance, Donald Trump is governing. So a lot of things are coming to a head, not the least of which is this sudden suspicion of Russian meddling. And the interesting thing about that is that, you know, even within the election integrity movement, there's a certain division about how to ride that wave because it does seem to have a lot of mythology to it. And yet at the same time, it's given us our one opportunity that we've really ever had to say, hey, you know, there's a real problem here. And there are some heavy hitters like Woolsey from inside the government who are willing to start pointing out that there is a problem and that there is a vulnerability. The issue, though, is that if you introduce solutions aimed at the Russians, in quotes, or hackers, outside hackers, what you wind up doing is, in mafia terms, is closing a city. You know, when a city is closed for the mafia, it means one family has complete control over it, and you shut out everybody else from the outside. Well, if we button up the system against hackers and the Russians, we leave it wide open still to insider manipulation. And in our view, insider manipulation has basically been the problem all along. These elections have been hinky and very suspect since long before the Russians took an interest. And, you know, you have these corporations. You got Diebold back in the day, ES&S now, Dominion, Command Central, Triad, very, very shady corporations with a significant right-wing pedigrees. And you have them at the epicenter of this with virtually unmonitored control of the programming processes for these computers and these machines. And that includes the optical scanners as well. Optical scanners are computers. And as a matter of fact, they have more code on them than DREs. They have about 500 to 700,000 lines of code on a memory card that counts your votes in an optical scan. You can, with the interpolation of literally 3 or 4 lines of code among that 500,000 or so, alter the results of elections. There is really no recourse. We saw what happened with the recounts in 2016. So the fact that ballots exist 2000. Is not enough unless they're really treated, you know, sacrosanctly and audited in a uniform and public way.
We're speaking with Jonathan Simon, Executive Director, Election Defense Alliance, also the author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft, and the New American Century. After this brief break, we'll be back and we will continue our conversation about election integrity. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I am Mickey Huff. Today's program, we're talking about national election integrity. And, of course, we're talking about a conference. For those of you listening in Berkeley, it is October 7, 8 at South Berkeley Senior Center. For those of you listening around the country after the fact, this is streaming and archived, so you can actually go back and look at it. NVRTF.org is where you can get information. Also on ProjectCensored.org, where we will link to all of the footage for those of you that can't be there or didn't see what was going on. We're also speaking with Jonathan Simon, author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft, and the New American Century. And also in this segment, we're going to be joined by someone who's, of course, no stranger to the Project Censored audience, Professor Mark Crispin Miller from New York University, who has a long history both speaking about, researching, and writing books about election fraud. So before we jump back into this segment, Richard Ham, you're the co-chair of the Voting Rights Task Force. You wanted to remind people about the fact that this California bill, AB 840, Richard Tam, tell us about, again, the bill and the fact that an assembly member is stepping forward on this.
Okay, well, Ray Lutz and assembly member Bill Quirk will both be at this conference. Ray Lutz won a lawsuit against San Diego because they were not including all the vote-by-mail ballots in the 1% manual tally. By the way, the 1% manual tally is our version of an audit of the election. It's an extremely poor audit because it's only 1%, and it takes a huge amount of time for the registrars to do it. So the very large counties, the registrars, were not including millions of the vote-by-mail ballots in the 1% manual tally because they just didn't have the time because it's so time-consuming. Ray Lutz won a lawsuit against San Diego because they weren't including it. And coincidentally, we had this amendment to Bill AB 840, which allows them to not include all the vote-by-mail ballots. Coincidence? I think not. I think they possibly were scared that they may be faced with a lawsuit, too, because they were not doing this. So Bill Quirk, who authored AB 840, wants to work with us, he says. So he will be at our conference to talk about this amendment and this bill. And in us trying to work with him, we will have at least three or four people, talking about much more efficient ways of doing an audit. So we don't have to rely so heavily on the 1% manual tally. We can offer him alternatives that would be less time-consuming for the registrars of voters to use. So this may be an opening for us to dialogue with them and actually end up with something better.
Okay, thank you, Richard Tam. Again, those of you interested in this issue, you can go to nvrtf.org. Let's go back to our other guests. We actually have a new guest that we wanted to remind listeners of. We are joined still by Jonathan Simon on the phone, author Code Red, Computerized Election Theft, and the New American Century. We are also now joined by Professor Mark Crispin Miller. Of the several books he's written, one of them was Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One Too, Unless We Stop Them. Well, of course, we're well beyond that, Mark Crispin Miller, and perhaps that has already happened. Mark, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Mickey, and it's great to be with these other guys you're having on, too.
Indeed, and you're no stranger to sharing the stage with many of the folks that are involved in the National Election Integrity Conference, including Bob Fitrakis, but also Jonathan Simon, who's on with us. And so, Mark, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what your take is on what's been happening in terms of election fraud, given your long history researching?
I've been toiling in these fields, as Jonathan has, forever. And we've had the same experience of running into the same uncannily resilient brick wall, you know, when we try to get the press, even the left press, sometimes especially the left press, to pay attention to it, we find that we don't get any kind of a reception except, say, by Project Censored. And I think it's an important fact, this difficulty that we've all been having, even someone as famous and glamorous as Bobby Kennedy Jr. had the same trouble with a couple of essays he wrote for Rolling Stone on this problem. The media attacked him, ridiculed him, called him a conspiracy theorist. I think it's important for us to recognize the fact that this is not a coincidence, that this kind of enduring, systematic, monolithic obstruction, this refusal to deal honestly with what has to be the most significant problem facing any country that calls itself a democracy, that has to reflect some very high-placed interest in seeing to it that things don't change for the better. And I think that anyone who wants to get a handle on how long this has been going on and how serious this problem is has to get hold of an unknown classic, a book called Vote Scam, V-O-T-E-S-C-A-M, by James Collier and Kenneth Collier, a couple of brothers, who discovered way, way back in 1970 that an election in Florida had been stolen through a computerized vote count. They discovered this because one of them actually was a candidate in this race in Florida, a House race. He ran up against the Democratic Congressman Claude Pepper. And, I mean, I'm not going to get into the weeds of the details, but suffice it to say that this book is an absolutely riveting account of a decades-long struggle by these two brothers who had smoking gun evidence of systematic election theft in that race and then in some subsequent races, smoking gun evidence that they could not get the media to accept. The outlets and the individuals who shot them down, who ran away from them, included the Miami Herald and the Miami News, Jack Anderson, the legendary investigative journalist, Catherine Graham of the Washington Post, Mike Wallace at CBS's 60 Minutes, who expressed initial interest and then decided he didn't want to have anything to do with it. David Burnham of the New York Times expressed initial interest, then didn't want to have anything to do with it. CNN's Ed Turner said he would not touch this story under any circumstances. ABC's Nightline, the New York Daily News, the Wall Street Journal, UPI's Helen Thomas, the AP, the Washington Times expressed initial interest and then didn't want to have anything to do with it, and NPR's Nina Totenberg, okay?
Do you think this story is censored, Mark?
The story is censored big time, okay? And what the Collier brothers came to discover in this book of theirs, which, by the way, they had to self-publish in the 90s, and which people can get as an e-book from the Forbidden Bookshelf series, which I edit, forbiddenbookshelf.com. What they came to intuit was that there was some kind of a deep connection between the Kennedy assassination in 1963 and this issue. Not least important is the startling fact that computerized vote counting actually began in 1964 in the first election following the assassination of John Kennedy, which, if we step back and look at objectively, we can see was a kind of government by gunplay. That, in other words, this was interference with democratic politics through violence, which we could argue actually happened again in 1968 with the killing of Bobby Kennedy, which changed the electoral calculus grievously at that moment. And again in 1972 with the attempted assassination of George Wallace, which again smoothed Richard Nixon's path to re-election. At any rate, let me conclude this little riff of mine by reading from something extremely relevant here and something that will help us understand that ultimately the reason why we're all having and have been having such an infernal time trying to get the word out to the American people about this problem and possible solutions to it is that it isn't just a partisan thing. I mean, we're not just dealing with the evil Republicans and the clueless Democrats, although, of course, we are dealing with that problem, but that this impediment is actually something that's been imposed at a much higher level. Now, in 1976, there were two very important congressional reports on CIA activities. Everybody's heard of one. Everybody's heard of the Church Committee and the Church Report. The Church Committee had high-profile hearings on TV and everything, and everybody knows about what they discovered. Fewer people know about the House attempt, the Pike Committee report, which was immediately classified by the House when it was completed. The Pike Committee, unlike the Church Committee, had extremely hostile relations with the CIA and had a very hard time completing their report for that reason. At any rate, when the House classified the Pike report, someone leaked a copy to the Village Voice. And the Village Voice, in February of 1976, published extensive excerpts from the Pike report. And I'm going to read a short paragraph from the introduction in the Voice by Aaron Latham to that report. It may surprise some to discover that the largest single category of covert activity concerns tampering with free elections around the world. These election operations make up a full 32% of the covert action projects approved by the 40 Committee since 1965. The 40 Committee is the body around the president that basically gave the CIA its marching orders. The report says the operations usually mean, quote, providing some form of financial support to foreign parties and individuals. Such support could be negative as well as positive. Now, first of all, this sheds an interesting light on all this hysteria about Russia interfering with our election by buying $100,000 worth of Facebook ads, right? But beyond that, I think it's extremely important to note that the CIA has primarily been in the business of election rigging forever, and that this is more than likely to have something to do with the fact that the media has refused to discuss this issue, has refused to give it due and proper coverage, with the same weird insistence, the same weird unanimity that has also marked the media's refusal to report any of the truth about the Kennedy assassination. And when you have that kind of monolithic media response or non-response to a very important story, and we can include 9/11 in that, it tells us that, the, for want of a better term, the deep state is involved and very committed to making sure that, that real democracy does not break out in the United States. And I think that that's what all those of us who've been struggling with this issue for so long, and at such cost for many of us, have actually been dealing with.
Indeed, this is Professor Mark Crispin Miller, New York University, longtime researcher on issues of election fraud and author. Also, Jonathan Simon is still with us, and he's the author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft in the New American Century. We'll conclude our conversation about election integrity and election fraud issues on the Project Censored Show after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. Today's program, we're looking at national election integrity as a major challenge to our purported democratic republic. And of course, we're hearing from our guests that this is not a new issue involving Russian hacking. It's in fact been something that's been going back decades, and it's also the subject of a major conference, the National Election Integrity Conference, the second annual Take Back the Vote. But we are joined here still to wrap up the program by Jonathan Simon, author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft in the New American Century, also executive director of Election Defense Alliance. You can learn more at CodeRed 2016. That's CodeRed2016.com/blog. We're also joined by Professor Mark Crispin Miller, author of Fooled Again and other books, also the fantastic foreword for Censored 2017, I have to add. And you heard Mark Crispin Miller before the break giving us a very brief but intense rundown of the history of the CIA and deep state manipulation of elections. Jonathan Simon, let's go back to you, and you can kind of pick up where Mark was leaving off.
It was intense. And if Mark's view and recounting of what is transpiring is close to reality, then it does explain in many ways why this has been such a head bang against wall experience for those who are trying to promote this very, very basic core protocol of democracy. And it's something to really think about, because in that view, whether it's the CIA or the corporations, it's basically the oligarchs. And the public is the enemy. And, you know, if you go back to Rome, at one time there was a tribune or two tribunes of the plebs, and the people were represented, and there was something resembling, for the time, a balance of power and a functioning government. And then as that culture moved towards empire, you saw what happened. I mean, they kept the tribunes, but they were figureheads, and they didn't really have any power at all, and all the power began to shift over to the emperor. And you saw emperors that resembled in many ways Donald Trump, and one after another, and tremendous amount of bloodshed and a long, long, slow breakdown. That may be the fate of all republics, of all democracies. We don't know. We're just looking at it historically. But if that's really what is happening here, on the break I said to Mark, what's a mother to do? And he answered, well, maybe actually turn to democracy, although he put it a little more eloquently than that. And I would say that's one of the biggest problems at this point is, and this is, of course, intersecting with Project Censored, is, you know, bringing this message that democracy is imperiled, it's really on life support, if even that, to the people in a form that can be digested and in a form that spurs rapid and tenacious and insistent and fierce action. Because when the public is the enemy, when it is the 1% or the 0.1%, basically trying to keep control and keep down everybody else, in this age of so-called information control is a huge part of that process. And we need what amounts to a revolution. We may be past the place where, I think we are past the place where normal political processes suffice, and yet at the same time, I don't think we could withstand a violent revolution. So what we need is we need real dissemination of information, and we need a cultural sea change where people are willing in a nonviolent way to gather and make their power felt. I happen to believe that probably the best weapon that the public has is economic, is in their role not just as workers and taxpayers, but as consumers. This system, it runs on money. It's a capitalist system, and we are an essential cog in terms of what we are willing to go and buy. I believe that's a big part of it. But organizing a process where people say, okay, I ain't buying. I'm not going to participate in this system for things that I don't need until there is legislation drafted and until this system is restored so that votes are counted publicly and observably. That's asking a lot from an organizational standpoint. And also, one of the key questions to be asked here is, are we believing that we can have our democracy on the cheap, the way we have basically been seduced into believing that election night is about speed, convenience, ease, and above all, entertainment, that this is a media property? Or are we willing to invest both the money and the sweat to have a democratic system that actually has as its bedrock protocol an observable public process of vote counting that can actually earn the trust of the public, rather than just these reassurances, these plank reassurances that come from our so-called leaders?
Well, Jonathan Simon, that's a good rundown of some of the things that not only we face, but some things we can do. Mark Crispin-Miller, let's bring you back in.
Jonathan, I have a very good slogan for your movement, your boycott movement: no consumption without representation.
That is good.
Free of charge. What I would say is the key problem here is indeed the problem of informing people. Almost nobody knows that an abundance of pretty solid evidence suggests clearly that Donald Trump wasn't actually elected on November 8th. And I don't simply mean that he lost the popular vote. I think that there's compelling evidence that he even lost the vote in the swing states. Part of that evidence, not the least of it, is the fact that the Republicans moved heaven and earth to sabotage the recounts that Jill Stein launched in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, and then sued successfully to shut them down. The exit poll results also pretty clearly indicate that Hillary, believe it or not, won in the swing states. The same evidence, pretty much, that proves, I would say beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the Democratic Party nomination was stolen from Bernie Sanders earlier last year. And let me just add that Jonathan Simon has written an excellent essay on both those bouts of theft. It came out in Mint Press News, if anyone's interested in reading an overview, a good overview of some of the evidence for the serial theft that completely did in what was left of American electoral democracy last year. Not enough people know these important facts. All too many people are explaining that Hillary lost because she's a Wall Street shill and a warmonger, both of which happen to be true. You know, I'm not arguing with that characterization. But we have to let our judgments of electoral results rest more on forensic evidence and numbers and so on than on what it is we want to think. Not enough people know Jonathan's book, Code Red, or that it even exists. These are all indications of the fact that there's been a very successful blackout on the information people really urgently need and should be getting from our so-called free press and never do. So now is the time, of course, to try to use social media while it's still available to us, although lately we notice that it's being shut down, it's being squeezed tight. The gag is tightening on Facebook and through Google and on YouTube and on Twitter, precisely to prevent the kind of conversation that we need. Let me sort of wrap this up just by offering a kind of bright spot in this rather dark picture, which is that there is out there a considerable constituency, easily a plurality, possibly even a majority, certainly a majority of young Americans of all colors and all classes who were desperately unhappy with the outcome of last year's elections. The fact that Bernie Sanders actually did sweep the primaries and the caucuses last year tells us that there is potentially a very, very large and, I think, responsive audience, the makings of a movement. And my own experience in the classroom tells me that if you tell young people that such and such an idea is a conspiracy theory, they don't respond in the same intimidated way that older people do, people in our generation do. That meme has sort of lost its sting, and that's because of digital media. That's because young people are well aware of how easy it is to find the other side of the story just by pressing a few keys on the keyboard.
Indeed, and Mark Crispin Miller, that's exactly why we've seen also another meme, the so-called fake news meme, so that we have algorithms that can now suppress legitimate news stories. Google is now algorithming, if that's to coin a term, anti-establishment news and information to the margins or hinterlands of the search engines.
Right.
This is a real and ongoing problem, and it directly affects then any of these key issues that you ran down earlier in the show, and especially the main focus of our program today, which is the election integrity movement and the history of election fraud. Jonathan Simon, let's give you the last word here, 2 minutes. Let's hear from you about some other things that we can be doing, and feel free, the both of you, to share places where people can get more information about your very important work.
I second Mark's motion. Steve Freeman in 2004, you mentioned it earlier, wrote a wonderful book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? It is a really rock-solid, airtight argument that presents evidence. So the information was out there. It was out there 12 years ago. Since then, if anything, we're given less evidence to work with. That's all part of this whole process. You pull the exit polls and you do all sorts of work to make it more difficult for forensic analysis to take place. So if anything, the quality of the evidence we work with has gone down. This information was there. It was in a book. It could have been read. It could have been disseminated. It could have been absorbed. Much that Mark and I have written and our colleagues have written has been around for a while. The real key here, I think, is individuals taking responsibility for the well-being of their culture. And that comes at surprising times. It's sort of like little mini eras where people step up and they look back to the public sphere. We've gone through a profoundly private phase for a long time, probably beginning with the money grubbing in the 80s and with Reagan, where people have looked inward and not outward and really concentrated on the private rather than the public sphere. One of the very, very few boons that Donald Trump has brought in his wake is perhaps a reversal of that, and that people are looking again to the public sphere, if only out of desperation and just sheer outrage. But the willingness to go out there and ruin somebody's day by talking about this, by not just avoiding the difficult topics, right, but by bringing them up and bringing up organizations that are working towards this, and books, for instance, like Code Red, for instance, books that contain this information and contain references so that you can pick up other information and become more informed and then go about informing others and not be shy about that. We are at a stage where that information could spread very rapidly and possibly be provoked even into organized action. We're going to need plenty of that. We're not going to get this kind of reform from our legislatures, you know, and legislators and administrators by petitioning the Lord with prayer and saying, please, there's going to have to be a lot of, more than pressure, there's going to have to be insistence, and it's going to have to be sustained insistence.
Jonathan Simon, thank you very much for the very erudite, concise closing remarks that remind us that we can do something. You can go to CodeRed2016.com. Mark Crispin Miller, do you have any place that you'd like to send people on the web? I know you already said Forbidden Bookshelf, which is a fantastic series you edit, but anything else you'd like to tell people about where to get more information about your great work?
Let me just repeat the importance of people reading Vote Scam, and then while they're checking that out, they can look at all the other titles in the Forbidden Bookshelf series. There are about 24 of them. ForbiddenBookshelf.com. But I do feel very strongly that all of us who care about this issue should definitely read Vote Scam. You won't be sorry, because it's kind of a page turner.
Mark Crispin Miller, again, thank you so much for joining the program. Jonathan Simon, thank you so much for coming on the Project Censored show. And at Project Censored, we care about these very issues deeply, and we do believe that our role is to bring up these inconvenient topics for people and really help people wake up from this great slumber before it might be too late. Thank you both for joining the Project Censored show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mickey. Thanks for the work you do.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaigns.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. The Project Censored Show airs on 40 stations around the U.S., from Maui to New York. Anthony Fest, our producer, Erica Bridgman, our engineer. We'll see you next time.
Habitualized, alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. In the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love. Crowd out, fist pumping, rhythm.